having seen and contrasted the old paradigm with the new paradigm, and having seen that the body is simply a printout from consciousness, let's see how we can make practical use of this knowledge. The knowledge I'm giving you in this tape series is not something that I invented. It comes from thousands of years of very ancient tradition called Ayurveda. And the word Ayurveda has at its roots the two words, Ayus, which means life, Veda, which means knowledge. So basically the word Ayurveda means knowledge of life. And its basic principle is what we have already outlined. There's a very nice aphorism in Ayurveda. If you translate that into English, it goes somewhat like this. As is the atom, so is the universe. As is the human body, so is the cosmic body. As is the human mind, so is the cosmic mind. As is the microcosm, so is the macrocosm. So given that basic understanding, we'll see how this knowledge then gives us more knowledge of different body types, physiological responses, biological rhythms, gives us more knowledge of how we use our sensory experiences to bring about changes in our body. So to begin with, let's just take the first notion, which is very crucial to our understanding of the body in Ayurveda, and that is the understanding of physiological body types. It's very simple. I think we all understand that we are different from each other. We're different physically, emotionally, intellectually. Science today, for example, acknowledges that we possess what they call biochemical individuality. No two people have exactly the same level of cholesterol or the same level of iron in their blood. This is also true of our psychological makeup. We possess emotional individuality, intellectual individuality, psychological individuality. If we are to live easily, comfortably, effortlessly, without strain, then we must respect our uniqueness at all our levels, physical, emotional, intellectual. And understanding our body type helps us to do that. I'll give you just a few simple examples to show how that's true, for example. Let's say three people get stuck in a traffic jam. One person gets nervous and anxious. A second person gets angry and impatient. A third person switches on the radio and enjoys Mozart. What's the difference between these three body types? And how does it happen? This is what Ayurveda tells us. One person drinks three sips of coffee and his nerves get jangled. Another person downs three cups of black espresso and nothing happens. One person drinks orange juice and gets heartburn. Another feels refreshed. So when we are reacting to either food or a situation or a circumstance or a person or to the weather, we are actually responding to a signal that's coming from inside us. The signal may be in the form of comfort or discomfort, but if we could learn how to listen to these signals that are being sent to us all the time from within us, then we'd realize that these signals affect our moods, they affect our behavior, they affect our perceptions, our tastes, our habits, our attraction to other people, our appetites, our urges, and so on. So knowing your psychophysiological body type, as it's called, psycho because it's mind, and physiological because it's body, so knowing your, one might say, mind-body type allows you to tune into yourself, and of course, to others in your environment, so that once you're tuned in, then you can respond appropriately. Also, what happens is you become less a bundle of conditioned reflexes that's constantly being triggered by people and circumstance. Most people react in predictable ways. But once you know your body type, then you have a much more spontaneous control over your reactions to situations, circumstances, food, weather, etc. Every time there's an event in the mind, there's a corresponding event in the body. If you're afraid of the dark, for example, that fear takes the physical form of adrenaline shooting through your bloodstream. All our hopes, all our fears, the faintest wisps of emotion and desire have left their mark on our physiology. And these mental events are constantly shaping our body. Now, if you know the body type, then you can look at a person, and by looking at their physical body, you can have a good idea of the mental events that shape that physical expression. On the other hand, if you know how their mind works, then you can predict the kind of body they'll have. There's an ancient expression here in Vedic science, again in Ayurveda, which says, if you want to know what your mind was like in the past, then all you have to do is examine your body now. And if you want to know what your body will look like in the future, then you should examine your mind now, because the two are inseparably one. So basically, understanding of body type is very crucial now for us to understand how healing works and how we can interact with our environment, knowing our body type. Included with this program is some printed material, and there's a questionnaire that will allow you to determine your body type. And once you know your body type, then there'll be a whole host of techniques and strategies that are based on the understanding of the body type. So the first thing to do is answer that questionnaire and score yourself and find out what your body type is. There are approximately 10 different body types that come about as a result of different permutations and combinations of what are called, in technical language, they're called doshas. That's just a Sanskrit word for mind-body principles. There are three basic body types. The first is Vata, Vata, V-A-T-A. It governs movement. The second is called Pitta, P-I-T-T-A. It governs metabolism. The third is called Kapha, K-A-P-H-A. It controls structure. Now, each of us is a unique combination of these three basic principles, but one of them tends to dominate. So a Vata person displays certain characteristics. These are usually the following. A light, thin build. A Vata person performs activity very quickly. Their digestion and hunger is irregular. They usually have light, interrupted sleep. They're extremely enthusiastic people, vivacious by nature, very imaginative. Excitability is a predominant feature of these people, and changing moods. They are quick to grasp new information, but also quick to forget. They tend, when they are under stress, to worry a lot. They also have constipation as a predominant feature when they get stressed. They tire easily. They have a tendency to overexert, and their mental and physical energy comes in bursts. Now, if you know of somebody who says, I can eat anything I want and I don't gain weight, then they're a characteristic Vata. And you'll find that they're hyper-excitable. They move around a lot. They don't have much fat under their skin. They have prominent tendons and bony prominences are there. So people who display any one of these qualities, they're showing this aspect of movement that characterizes both their mind and their body. They may be hungry at any time of the day or night. They love excitement and constant change. They go to sleep at different times every night. They skip meals. Their habits are in general irregular. They digest food well one day, but maybe poorly the next day. They display bursts of emotion that are short-lived and easily forgotten. They walk quickly. Their movements show this aspect of movement. I think the main thing to understand is that even if we don't have all of these characteristics, if we display some of these, then we are displaying those Vata characteristics. And when they go out of balance, there are strategies that we can use to bring them back into balance. The Vata type is also called ectomorphic, traditionally. They have this characteristic of angular features, thin build, not gaining weight easily. The second body type, the Pitta type, that's more mesomorphic. They have a medium build. They have more strength and endurance than the Vata type. They usually are very enterprising people, like challenges. They have a very sharp intellect, but they also have sharp hunger and thirst and strong digestion. The kind of person who just can't wait when he's hungry. His stomach is growling all the time when he's hungry. He gets very stressed if he misses a meal. They have a tendency towards anger and irritability under stress. The Vata types, when they're under stress, they get anxious and they tend to worry. Whereas the Pitta types, anxiety is not a feature. The feature is anger and impatience. They also have a tendency to have freckles in their skin. They break out into acne quite easily. They have an aversion to hot weather. They have very precise, articulate speech. They're good speakers, orators. When a person is displaying any of the following features, he's acting his pitta out. When he feels very ravenously hungry, if dinner is even half an hour late, he gets stressed about that. Pitta people also live by their watch, usually resent having their time wasted. They wake up at night sometimes feeling hot and thirsty. They take command of situations, or at least feel they should. They learn from experience that others find them too demanding, sometimes sarcastic, sometimes critical. When you see them walking, you see them having a determined stride to their walk. So just by looking at a person walking, you can sometimes know this person has pitta tendencies. The kapha type, which is the third characteristic type, K-A-P-H-A, these are people who are endomorphic. In other words, they are the kind of people who might say, all I have to do is look at food and I gain weight. They have a real hard time losing weight. They have a solid, powerful build. They usually have a great deal of physical strength and endurance. They have steady energy. They're slow and graceful in action. They're usually the kind of people who are quite tranquil and relaxed. They have a relaxed personality. They're slow to anger. They don't show the features of anger that Pitta displays or worry that Vata displays. They just hold on to things, whether it's fluid or fat or relationships, whatever. They are slow to grasp new information but have a very good retentive memory. They usually have a very heavy, prolonged sleep. They have a tendency, as I said, to obesity. Their digestion is slow. Their hunger is mild. They're usually very affectionate, tolerant, and forgiving people, but when they become stressed, they tend to become possessive and even more complacent than they usually are. When people mull over things for a long time before making a decision, they're displaying a kapha tendency. It's very kapha, for example, to wake up slowly, lie in bed a long time, and need coffee when you're waking up in the morning. It's also kapha to be happy with things as they are, not really wanting to change too much. Kapha people respect other people's feelings, and they feel genuine empathy more frequently than, say, Vata or Pitta people. They seek emotional comfort, though, from eating, and that's why they tend to hold on to their weight. They have graceful movements, gliding walk, even though they're overweight. When you see a person gliding by, very gracefully, that's displaying a kapha tendency. Once you do the test, you'll see that everything really fits together and you can have a much better understanding of your mind-body type. Whether you are dominantly showing vata tendencies or showing pitta tendencies or kapha tendencies or a combination, for the first time, become a witness to the mind-body connection. Ultimately, we just do things spontaneously anyway. But now, just being a witness of the common characteristics that we display under certain situations allows us to have a firmer grip on the mind-body connection as it pertains to us as unique individuals. It's important to understand that we are not trying to have a situation where we have same amount of vata, pitta, kapha. All we are trying to achieve is the correct balance, which is a unique thing for us as unique individuals. Also, it's important to understand that one particular dosha is not better than another. So it's not necessarily true that it's preferable to have vata or preferable to have kapha or preferable to have pitta. All you need to know is what are the tendencies you display under usual situations, what are the tendencies you display when you're under stress. And when you get to know yourself, then you have a better control, a firmer grip on your own nature, so to speak. So each of the body types has its own positive as well as its own negative attributes. The positivity comes out spontaneously when they're in balance. Vata people are imaginative, they're sensitive, they're spontaneous, they're resilient, they get exhilarated when they are feeling good. Pitta people are intellectual, confident, enterprising, joyous. Kapha people are calm, sympathetic, courageous, forgiving, loving. The negativity comes out spontaneously also when they're out of balance. So if we have a Pitta tendency, the Pitta traits are more likely to get imbalanced. If we have a Kapha tendency, then the Kapha traits are more likely to get imbalanced. And so naturally we pay more attention to those, but ultimately there are only two signals that the universe gives us. One is a sense of comfort, and the other is a sense of discomfort. How to assess whether we're moving into balance? Just listen to the signals of comfort and discomfort in your body. When we are feeling uncomfortable, either physically or emotionally or even with an intellectual dilemma, then we are moving out of balance. And when we are feeling comfortable inside, then we are moving into balance. So we can understand that health is a state of balance. When you're healthy, then you're displaying this balance. And what do we mean by balance? To have the flexibility, both in the mind, in the body, to adjust to change. Perfect balance, infinite flexibility in the face of constant change. If you can maintain that, then spontaneously the positive attributes of each of the body types will emerge. And when those positive attributes emerge, then one feels joyous, one feels happy, and then spontaneously the body, which is nothing but happy molecules, happy thoughts, happy feelings, happy molecules coming out spontaneously, not through some mood making, not through some manipulation, but just spontaneously by virtue of being in balance. When there is imbalance, on the other hand, then that can result in a health problem. And there's always a reason for that. Let's say you begin to have a vata imbalance. Why does it happen? The usual reasons are one of the following things. You have been under stress recently and you reacted to it with anxiety. Or you have exhausted yourself physically or undergone a period of mental strain and overwork. When people with vata constitutions overdo things, then they easily go out of balance, unlike, say, kapha people who have a lot of physical endurance. Vata people are much more prone to be affected, say, by cigarette smoking or by coffee or by drugs in general. They have exaggerated responses. Kapha people, not so much. If there's a sudden change in a person's life, or even the seasons are changing, the Vata people are the kind of people who get the cold at the change of season much more frequently than the other types. And in fact, Vata people get very easily imbalanced if they have a lot of cold food, or raw food, or dry food, or iced beverages. Vata people also cannot skip meals easily. It takes its toll on their body. If they go on a stringent diet, Vata people will have quickly the state of imbalance. Or if they sleep late, or they sleep poorly for even a few days, then they go into imbalance very easily. If they take frequent trips, they have jet lag much more frequently than other people. They suffer easily from things like grief, fear. Fear is a dominant emotion in Vata people under stress. So mental indications of Vata imbalance include worry, anxiety, an overactive mind, impatience, a loss of mental focus, short attention span, and sometimes depression. Behavioral indications of Vata imbalance include insomnia, fatigue, inability to relax, restlessness, low appetite, and impulsiveness. And the physical indications are constipation, dry or rough skin, low stamina, loss of energy, intestinal gas, high blood pressure, back pain. Back pain is a frequent feature amongst Vata people. Also, menstrual cramps, dysmenorrhea, premenstrual syndrome is a Vata imbalance. Irritable bowel syndrome, chapped skin, or intolerance to cold and to wind, aching and arthritic joints, weight loss, acute pain anywhere, muscle spasms anywhere, these are all signs of Vata imbalance. If you notice, they're all features of movement. Just like Vata people, when they're stressed, they have certain things that happen to them. The same applies to, of course, Pitta and Kapha types. Pitta types get aggravated when they've been under stress and have reacted to it with suppressed anger or frustration or resentment. Pitta people also get imbalanced when they place excessive demands on themselves, when they live under constant pressure from deadlines, cannot bear to waste time. Or Pitta people get aggravated when they eat hot, spicy food or oily food or fried food or food that contains a great deal of salt. Their diet, if it contains a large amount of fermented things like cheese, vinegar, sour cream or alcoholic beverages, if the weather is hot and humid, typical summer weather, it aggravates these Pitta tendencies. If you get fatigued or badly sunburned, that also brings out Pitta tendencies. And what are the indications that you have a Pitta imbalance? Anger, hostility, self-criticism, irritability, impatience, resentment. Behavioral indications of Pitta imbalance include outbursts of temper, argumentative stance, tyrannical behavior, sometimes criticism of others, intolerance of delays. These emerge as one goes into imbalance. So here, you see, it's a much more compassionate view of somebody's behavior, because you really don't have to criticize the behavior if you understand that it's basically a psychophysiological imbalance that can be easily corrected once you know what is causing that imbalance. Physical indications of Pitta imbalance include skin inflammations, boils, acne, excessive hunger or thirst, bad breath, hot flushes, heartburn, acid stomach, ulcers, sour body odors, and sometimes rectal burning, hemorrhoids. These are all features of Pitta imbalance. Now, the third body type is Kapha body type, and they, under stress, show certain other indications that reflect their state of imbalance. A serious Kapha problem, such as diabetes, allergies, or obesity, may frequently run in a family. That's a Kapha imbalance. So if you start to feel sick and the cause is Kapha imbalance, then there is a certain reason for that. And the reason could be that a serious Kapha problem, such as diabetes, allergies, or obesity, runs in the family. Or that you've gained a lot of weight and you feel depressed about it. If your diet contains large amounts of sugar, salt, fatty, or fried foods, heavy foods, dairy products, especially cheese, milk, ice cream, these are all things that will aggravate a Kapha tendency. If you feel stressed and you react to it by withdrawing, feeling insecure or unwanted, then you're displaying a Kapha tendency also. If you place excessive emphasis on possessing, storing, and saving things, that also then results in Kapha imbalance, which is reflected in physiological changes in the body. If you act dependent or overprotective in relationships, a Kapha tendency. If you sleep late more than a few days in a row, that may also aggravate a Kapha tendency. And cold, damp weather, snowy weather, typically winter and spring weather, also bring that tendency out. These are the people who get depressed in winter, for example. Mental indications of Kapha imbalance are dullness, mental inertia, laziness, stupor, depression, over-attachment. Behavioral indications, procrastination. People delay things all the time. They're unable to accept change. They tend to get greedy or oversleep or get heavy or their movements become much slower. Physical indications include intolerance to cold and damp weather, sinus congestions, runny nose, fluid retention in tissues, bloating, chest congestion, skin becomes pale, loose and aching joints may occur. High cholesterol is a typical Kapha imbalance. These are people really have to watch their diet because even the slightest change, their cholesterol shoots up. They experience heaviness in limbs, frequent colds, as I mentioned, weight gain, allergies, asthma, cough, cysts in their bodies. The key is to understand what are the tendencies you are prone to. knowing what those tendencies are when you are under stress and knowing the kinds of imbalance they can create then allows you to use the knowledge of Ayurveda very effectively to create balance again in your physiology. In the printed material that you have, you will find a lot of general guidelines for bringing Vata, Pitta and Kapha back into balance. And there are four broad areas of everyday life that can be used to promote balance. These include diet, exercise, daily routine, and what is called seasonal routine. Balancing Vata, for example, can be done through just regular habits or the experience of quiet, silence, attention to fluids, decreased sensitivity to stress, ample rest, warmth. Just taking a warm shower, for example, is a very effective way of balancing Vata. Or doing a hot sesame oil massage is a very useful way of balancing Vata. Making sure that you eat at regular intervals is a very effective way of restoring Vata. Restoring Pitta can be done by cooling things, taking cool drinks, by paying attention to leisure, by exposure to natural beauty, by a balance of rest and activity, by decreasing the amount of stimulants in the food, and taking the appropriate diet for Pitta. Restoring Kapha imbalance is a slightly different story because here you need more stimulation. And therefore, any form of stimulation through the senses, or more exercise, or just attention to weight control, or stimulation through a variety of experiences, or warmth or dryness will restore Kapha imbalance. Even exposure to different kinds of foods will restore Kapha imbalance. If you reduce the amount of sweet and increase the amount of bitter, pungent, astringent tastes, will restore not only the physical imbalances or the physical features that occur with Kapha imbalance, but also the mental features. Now, as we go through the five senses, in the next tape, we will see how we can use each of the senses to restore balance in our physiology. So in this section, what we are going to deal with is enhancing sensory perception. Also, the idea that we can use our perception and our experiences through the five senses to create balance inside the body. I'd like to go back to the basic notion that our body is part of the body of the universe. That basic expression, as is the atom, so is the universe. As is the human body, so is the cosmic body. And everything that happens in the universe ultimately results in what we can call biological rhythms in the body. So as the earth moves on its own axis, we have the cycle of night and day, which results in very profound changes in our physiology. As the earth moves around the sun, the cycles of the seasons, the tides cause ebb and flow in our physiology. Even the relationship of the sun, earth and moon as they move in relation to each other results in biological cycles in us, 28-day cycles. The human menstrual cycle is a good example of that, but there are many other 28-day cycles. You can give an animal a certain dose of radiation at 4 o'clock in the morning, it may kill him. You give the same dose of radiation at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it may have a beneficial effect. The reason is the body has completely changed in that 12-hour period. So the body is always changing, and it is trying to synchronize its rhythms with the rhythms of the universe. So the signal that comes to us when we are out of harmony with the universal rhythm is the sense of discomfort, whether it's physical, emotional, intellectual. So all techniques that we are going to talk about now are to resynchronize the body's rhythms with the rhythms of the universe. And we do that through our five senses also. What is sensory experience other than taking in information from the universe and then matching it with the information inside this universe, which is my body, My body is a whole universe within itself. And sensory experience is just taking information from the universe outside my skin into the universe inside my skin and matching intelligence with intelligence. So let's start with sound. If we understand the quantum mechanical framework well, then we realize that the body is in fact nothing other than vibration. Vibrations in the unified field which result in the molecules that make up the body. So the body is ultimately just vibration. And the vibration of the body has to match the vibrations that make up the universe. And this matching or locking in or falling into a rhythmic relationship with, it's called entrainment. E-N-T-R-A-I-N-M-E-N-T. To entrain with means to establish a rhythmic relationship with something. Entrainment was first described by a physicist named Itzhak Bentov. He did a very interesting experiment with clocks. He had 5 clocks. Each of them had a pendulum about the same size. He started the pendulums swinging at different times, not synchronously. But when he waited for about 4 hours or so, then what happened was the penduli gradually started swinging to the same rhythm. You can do this experiment any number of times, and you'll find that even though you start the pendulums swinging at different times, after a while they all start swinging to the same rhythm. And this phenomenon is called entrainment, falling into rhythmic relationship with each other. I'll give you another example of it. You take a baby and put it next to its mother's breast. After a while, the baby's heart rate will entrain with the mother's heart rate. In other words, there'll be a rhythmic relationship between the two. It may not be the same rate, but there's a relationship. The baby's breathing will entrain with the mother's breathing also. And in fact, when you agree with somebody or disagree with somebody, what's happening is entrainment or falling out of entrainment. When I agree with you, because my thoughts are stimulating the same quantum fields in my awareness, then my breathing spontaneously matches your breathing, and so on. If you have a lot of women living together, you'll find that after a while, their menstrual cycles will entrain with each other. They'll all have their menstrual periods about the same time. So entrainment is a universal phenomenon, and it begins at the moment of conception. A baby's rhythms start entraining with cosmic rhythms through the physiology of the mother. And then they keep doing that right through pregnancy, and then even after a baby is born, it needs the proximity to its mother to have this entrainment continue. And the entrainment is through all the 5 senses. We can take any one of the senses and see how that happens. For example, sound can entrain our body's rhythms with universal rhythms. Music can do that also. Now, in the last few years, there's been a lot of research on this. It's become obvious that music can influence the heart rate of a person, brain waves, blood pressure, stomach contractions, levels of hormones that are associated with stress, with immunity, can be influenced through music. Also, there are secretions in our body known as endorphins, which are the body's natural opiates, which means the body's natural morphine-like compounds, that are secreted when we listen to music that we enjoy. And therefore, when we are enjoying a certain piece of music, actually there are certain chemical changes occurring in the body. In fact, you can block the pleasure of music that a person gets by giving them an injection of something called Narcan, which is a narcotic antagonist, which means that when we are listening to music and enjoying it, then in fact we are generating some very powerful chemical messengers, the neuropeptides, and these are healing chemicals. They're the body's pharmacy. In the last few years, there's been some research which shows that different kinds of music will have different kinds of effects on the body. For example, high-pitched music will create a playful and happy mood, but also will speed up the metabolism. So high-pitched music, for example, would therefore be much more appropriate for a kapha type. because the kapha body type is hypometabolic, slow. If he hears high-pitched music, or if he hears music that has faster rhythm to it, that will increase his metabolism. On the other hand, low-pitched music slows down the body's metabolism. So it would be very useful, for example, in a vata type of person, to listen to a low-pitched music, also to music which has a slower rhythm to it. So slow and quiet music will bring about changes in the body that are the opposite of a hypermetabolic status. It's also been found, for example, that music played in post-surgical patients after surgery will decrease the need for pain medicines or for tranquilizers, and also hasten the recovery of a patient after surgery. And now music therapy is standardly used in various clinics to treat depression, migraine, anxiety, isolation and burn victims, also treatment of post-coronary patients, organ transplant patients, also after heart attacks. So this is already becoming standard therapy. This Ayurvedic knowledge helps us in many ways. And one of those is the whole notion that if we can introduce a vibrational sound in our body that resonates in all the cells of our body, that will facilitate or improve what we call entrainment, this falling into a rhythmic relationship with. Let me give you some examples of what are called tonal or vibrational sounds. These are sounds that vibrate in all the cells of the body. Traditionally, these are all the sounds of all the alphabets in all the languages. All the universe languages have more or less the same sounds to the alphabets. And if you take the vowels of these alphabets, the vowels are vibrational sounds. So let me give you an example of that. Ah, that's the sound of a vowel. Or a, or e, any of the vowels. Just take a deep breath, and then as you exhale, you make the sound of the vowel. And in English, of course, the vowels are A, E, I, O, U. So any of those vowels can be used to immediately cause a vibration in all the cells of our body. And when we do that, then what we do is we literally shake the cells, and as a result of vibrating the cells, they begin to entrain with each other, and they begin to train with other rhythms. So that's a way of restoring biological rhythm. There are other sounds, which are also sounds from the alphabet, that resonate in different parts of the body. The sound hum, for example, resonates mainly in the lungs. And again, the way you make it is you take a deep breath. Hum. That sound resonates in the lungs. It also resonates in the sinuses. It also resonates in the skull. The sound na, which is the sound of N, resonates in the eardrums. So again, what you do is you touch the back of your front teeth with your tongue, and then you make the sound of N, the alphabet N. So it's something like this. When you do that, you should be able to feel the resonance in the ears. This sound is used as a healing sound for people who have even mild degrees of deafness or tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears, or in fact just to cause that resonance in the ears to sharpen one's sense of hearing. The sound ma, which is the sound of M, which is the alphabet M, resonates mainly in the sinus cavities. So mmm or ma ma ma. This sound resonates in the sinus cavities and therefore is very useful for people who are more prone to sinus infections or sinus headaches. The sound of Y, which is the letter Y I'm talking about, ya, yu, ye, it mainly moves the temporomandibular joints. Ya, yu, ye. As you make that sound, your jaw moves, this joint moves. And as a result, this is very useful for people who have, for example, headaches or migraine from what is known as temporomandibular joint disease. It's a common syndrome that occurs in vata types when they are very hyper anxious, nervous, they tend to clench their teeth. So using this sound, ya, yu, ye, loosens this joint. And not only will it loosen the joint, it'll get rid of the headache, but more important, it will even get rid of the tension that comes. Because the tension creates the tightness then reinforces the tension. So if you release the tension, then the tightness gets released, and if you release the tightness, the tension gets released. The sound of laughter, which is the sound ha, it's very good for people who have indigestion, or people who are experiencing heartburn, or people who have an abnormal appetite. For example, they don't get hungry frequently enough, or they get too hungry. The sound is the sound of the letter H, and it bounces off the stomach. So, ha, 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 the sound of laughter. And in fact, if you make that sound frequently enough, then you'll even experience the emotion of laughter. Because what's an emotion? An emotion is a thought that is coupled to a physical sensation. And if you evoke the physical sensation, then the thought also comes. If you have the thought, that evokes the physical sensation. So when you join the two, you can evoke the appropriate emotion. So if you just take a deep breath and say, ha, 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 and bounce the sound off your stomach, you will experience the emotion of laughter. Now we know that when people experience emotions such as laughter, genuine laughter, then they make very powerful chemical messengers. In fact, the neuropeptides of laughter are very healing compounds. Dr. Norman Cousins has shown that laughter could be a very appropriate medicine for a number of diseases. Well, laughter as an emotion, but laughter as a sound also, has the ability to generate these peptides in the body. So I've given you quite a few examples of how we can use sound not only to begin entrainment, but we can use sound to bring about resonance in different parts of the body. And if we use all these sounds, we can see that we can entrain our body as a whole, also bring about vibrational changes and therefore the appropriate chemical changes in specific parts of the body. What you do is, you take a deep breath, and then as you're exhaling, you make the appropriate sound till you run out of breath. And then as you run out of breath, you take a deep breath again, and then you repeat the whole sequence. So with each sound, you could do it, say, 3 times. And if you did all the sounds, it would take you about maybe 2-3 minutes. And you would have refreshed your whole body through vibration. So you could take a deep breath, and you could just make the sound ya, you, ye on the exhalation. You could do that 3 times. Then you could switch to the sound na. Or you could take all the vowels, a, e, I, o, u. And then the sound ma or ma, ma. So all these sounds. And in fact, in the printed material included with these tapes, is a list of all the sounds that one can use and also instructions on how you can use those sounds to resonate in different parts of the body and also what the sounds are useful for. If once we have an intellectual understanding that sound is used to create entrainment and restore a disrupted biological rhythm, I would recommend that you take each of the sounds provided on the list and once a day, for about 5 minutes, practice the whole series, starting with the first, ending with the last. You take a deep breath and practice sounding out each one of those sounds about 3 times on the outgoing breath. If you practice these sounds regularly, and the whole procedure shouldn't take more than 3 or 4 minutes, you will experience the following changes in your physiology. Your sense of hearing will improve because there is a sound there to resonate against the eardrum inside the ear. Your digestion will improve as a result of the vowel sounds resonating in all the parts of the body. You will experience much more energy and you'll feel less fatigue. And then, of course, one can use specific sounds to get rid of a headache or get rid of a nervous stomach, etc. Incidentally, all of these procedures also are very useful breathing exercises, because what you're doing is, as you take in a deep breath, then you're practicing the sound on the outgoing breath, and then you sound it out for as long as you can, and then you're forced to take a deep breath again. And therefore, the sounds open up the lungs at the same time as they improve your physiology. So they're opening up the lungs, providing increased oxygen to your body, and so on. So you feel the sense of energy and renewal just as a result of making those sounds. So this is one technique of using sound. But of course, one can also listen to music. And any music that evokes a playful, happy mood or increases a sense of buoyancy is healing music. Now, of course, traditionally in Ayurveda, there are certain frequencies that are used to balance the body's rhythms at certain times of the day. However, any music that creates that feeling of buoyancy, that feeling of cheerfulness, will create the appropriate chemical responses in the body. A little bit of music every day, listening to a little bit of music, is very refreshing and very renewing. There's research now that shows that if you listen to some sad music, say Beethoven's Funeral March, and if you listen to it long enough, then your cells start behaving as if they're going to a funeral. They start literally responding to that at the cellular level. Or if you listen to rock music, the cells become quite jittery sometimes. Of course, that may be appropriate for short periods, but over a long period, it can be quite disruptive. Classical music always results in very smooth biological functioning and the appropriate release of chemicals that are healing. So listening to music, or making the appropriate sounds, or listening to internal sounds. There's one other way you can listen to sounds. It may sound a little esoteric, but it has a scientific basis to it. You gently occlude the ears with your forefingers. So you just very gently occlude the ear canals with your forefingers, close the eyes, and just have a receptive listening attitude. And then you may be able to hear from your own awareness, from inside you, certain sounds. At times it can sound like the ringing of bells, or at other times it can sound like music. At other times there are screeching sounds. Other times there are sounds like ocean waves. It's a good monitor of how your health is, because if your health is good, the sounds that come out from inside are very pleasant sounds. If your health is not good, the sounds that come out from inside are disruptive sounds. In fact, instruments are now being developed that can amplify the sounds each organ of the body makes. Then you can amplify that, and you'll find when there is certain disease, then the sound is disrupted. There's a distortion in the natural sound that's coming. Playing the appropriate sound back to the organ will restore that distortion. So listening to the internal sounds that are generated inside our body by gently occluding the ear canals with your forefinger and just having that quiet, receptive attitude will improve one's sense of hearing also. So these are some of the techniques that one can use to not only experience better sensory perception through sound, but also use sound for healing. And traditionally, in all cultures all over the world, sound has been used for healing. And they've used the same sounds, because the sounds are basically universal sounds. They form the alphabets of all the different languages. Our bodies are constantly bombarded from the environment through sound. So frequently we talk about pollution, but we fail to recognize that sound pollution is one of the important factors in inducing discomfort and also ultimately disease. For example, it's well known that loud noise amplifies aggression and can cause premature deafness and interferes with learning ability. Martial music has been traditionally used through centuries to make people go to war. So there are sounds that can evoke a host of emotional responses. And one can use the sounds to then get rid of the inappropriate emotions as well. And therefore, sound becomes a very important therapeutic tool in healing.